You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have Quentin Henning with me. Today, Quentin's going to talk to us about El Oro Resources, a sponsor to the show. El Oro trades in Canada under the symbol ELO. You can buy it down here in the States, as I have, under ELRRF. 61.9 million shares, recently trading at about $3.43 in Canadian, giving it a market cap around $212 million in Canadian money. The company's project is the ISCA project. It's a very large scale silver tin rich polymetallic deposit in Bolivia. The company's had a great deal of success, and that's why I'm really happy to have Quentin with me again to give us the latest, appraisal that he has of this project in Bolivia. So thank you so much, Quentin, for being with me again.
Thank you, Jay.
Now, I'm wondering if you could just start out briefly, give us an idea of this very unusual geological model. I mean, it's in Bolivia, but could you talk about, just briefly, about the geological model, and then perhaps the most recent assays? I see there was a 53.2-meter intersection of 234.19 grams silver equivalent, which is quite something. But if you could just sort of give us the geological model, and then also perhaps bring us up to date with the latest drill results and what they might mean for this project going forward.
Certainly. Look, this is a little bit unusual type system for most investors. Investors are familiar with, you know, porphyry coppers or porphyry copper gold or, you know, different types of gold deposits. This is a silver tin polymetallic system, as you said. Polymetallic simply means there's multiple different types of metals. Now, if you look at the reason why these things form and why they're so prolific in Bolivia, it has a lot to do with the underlying geology. Bolivia is an area, if you look, it's right where there's the bend in the coastline of South America along the convergent margin in the Pacific side. And, you know, you can see Bolivia is just kind of inboard from that. And it covers an area that, in my view, has seen a prolonged history of magmatism. And you get these, what are very complex magmas that evolve in that kind of setting. And the magmas that have evolved there take in a lot of different metals. They take in, you know, silver and tin and copper and zinc and lead and all sorts of things. And those magmas then come up through the crust. They form volcanoes, ultimately. But as the magma bodies come up, and a lot of them just kind of come up and then park themselves in the subsurface, they start to cool, and the goodies, we'll call them, come out. Okay, there's water in magma, okay, just so everybody knows. Mm-hmm. And what happens is a lot of those metals, the transition metals that we use in industries and stuff, those chemically, they don't like to go in the crystals that are forming from the magma chamber. Mm-hmm. They get flushed out, okay, and they go into the waters, and those waters, and they carry them up to upper parts of the crust and form these wonderful deposits. Tin is a bugger to move, and geologically, it's a difficult element to move. Other elements are, too, indium and stuff. I mean, they're very difficult elements to move. But in Bolivia, these magmas are just... they are conducive for carrying a big suite of metal. When you find one of these systems, they probably came up in multiple pulses. You know, there's probably, you know, 8 or 10 or 15 different pulses of magma, and each one of it carries a little bit different flavor of metal. You know, some might be zinc and lead and silver rich. Others might be more tin and even gold rich. Really depends. At ISCA, we see kind of a spectrum of multiple pulses.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that is sort of the model. And are there any sort of other, say, big mines that are like that?
Yes. the biggest single silver deposit on Earth, Potosi, is just to the north of us. It's part of this belt of this type of polymetallic deposit in Bolivia. Okay, so Potosi, which was, the mining began clear back in the Spanish time, has produced something on the order of 2 billion ounces of silver. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. But that's how big these things can be. They're absolutely huge systems. There's others nearby, current mines like Minera San Cristobal. San Cristobal is to the west of us. Another huge, in fact, it was the largest producer for several years, maybe a decade ago. So, yes, these are wonderful deposits that produce a lot of metal and actually a very high margin. They're both tonnage deposits that can create a lot of margin.
So you have done quite a bit of drilling already. You're in the middle of a drill season, a drill program right now. The most recent headline number I saw was the one I just mentioned, 53 meters, 234 gram silver equivalent. But there have been a lot of other of these long intersections as well. What can you tell us? And your focus primarily now is on the Santa Barbara breccia pipe, but there's several other breccia pipes inside this major caldera. And so I know you've done some work on some of the others, but as I understand it, the main focus right now is on the Santa Barbara breccia pipe. That's where the company, I believe, is hoping to build up a maiden resource, perhaps, in the not-too-distant future. But what can you tell us about the dimensions and the the geometry of what you know already in this Santa Barbara pipe?
Okay, as you said, this is a big volcano. The caldera, basically the collapsed cone or edifice of the volcano, is about 1.8 kilometers in diameter. And the Santa Barbara pipe, the breccia pipe, is up in the northwest quadrant of that caldera. So this pipe is just one of multiple erupted pipes that kind of form a ring around the margin of the caldera. This is where we first started drilling last year. There's a smaller pipe to the northeast of Santa Barbara where we drilled the first holes, but we could clearly see that there was kind of a center of gravity around this one pipe. So Santa Barbara is the focus of what will be the initial resource, but it's not to say it's all of the system. The company's done drilling elsewhere, and clearly the system's wide open, I mean, to the south and even to the north. Really what, it's like, it's one of those problems that it's a good problem to have. It's so darn big. Yeah. You basically, you kind of just have to decide, okay, we're going to target this area first for a resource. So Bill and his team, Bill and Osvaldo, have targeted a block that encompasses the Santa Barbara pipe, but also extends northward. They found through recent drilling that the breccias actually continue subsurface to the north of the Santa Barbara pipe out into what, was previously perceived as the envelope to the pipe. It's actually extending way out to the north or northwest. So what it means is the box is about 1,200 meters long from northwest to southeast. It's about 500 meters wide, and it's about 600 meters deep. And, that's a huge volume. To put it in context, I think that comes out, if my math was right, I did it earlier today, I think it's about 360 million cubic meters of rock. And, at a density of, say, 2.8, that's, about a billion tons even. Okay, I'm not saying the entire thing is mineralized, but if you look at the drill holes that have come back from that area to date, usually typically say between 30 and 50% of the overall length of the drill holes is mineralized, at reportable levels. All right, so if that holds true, then I would say a substantial subset of the billion-ton target should be in this resource. Now, the other thing that's quite intriguing, you can actually play with the numbers. You can go through and just do weighted averages of the silver equivalent grade of those drill holes or those intercepts in those drill holes, and you can come up with a pretty good idea of where the grade might fall to. And I'll let people do that. I don't want to lead them down the path. You can do your own exercise. You'll see where you land.
Yeah. Well, Quentin, how much more drilling are they going to have to do before they might have enough to come up with some sort of a beginning resource?
They will get the rest of the drilling done here over the next couple of months. It's the assay turnaround that's the critical part. Okay. I don't know how many holes they have outstanding right now. It's a bunch. I know that. But they're drilling a few more holes, especially in that northwest area where they drilled a couple of holes they talked about in the recent news release. Those were killer holes. I mean, visually, you know, they look like the real deal. So I think they're planning on poking some more holes up in that area. But I would say within the next month or two, they'll have all the drilling they need. It's a matter of getting the assays back. When those come, don't know. It's just one of those funky times right now. But I think the results should be very, very comparable to what's been announced to date.
So we might see a resource, if not the end of this year, first quarter of next year, potentially?
That's my guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, this is obviously a bulk mineable situation. It's a large tonnage situation. It would, if it goes into production, it would be a large CapEx project, no doubt about that. Not one that you'd normally look for juniors to handle. I'm wondering if there are, in Bolivia, where the project is, if there are some major companies down there working there that might find this kind of a project of interest. Or do you see some big boys down there? Because I'm thinking to myself, yes, so you have a 212 million market cap, Canadian money or whatever. I don't think the goal of the company is to be a producer necessarily.
I'm not going to speak to the aspirations Tom and Bill might have, but mining is a whole different league from exploring.
You know what?
But it can also create a lot of value. So I don't want to belittle it. But obviously the idea for most juniors is to go and find a big prize and then turn around and sell it. Right. Well, you know, your question is very, very accurate. You know, who's out there? Who's looking for this kind of deposit? Look, there aren't too many Bolivian companies. I mean, you know, you got the state-owned company, but I believe Comomo, but you know, it's not necessarily in the acquisition mode. The ones that are, we'll call it, non-Bolivian headquartered companies, like Pan American is one. You've got, obviously Sumitomo is there. They've been mining at San Cristobal for years. You've got several big companies that, I will just say are looking around. Here's what I see. I see Bolivia being about where Peru was in the late 1980s, early 1990s. Uh-huh. People are seeing the door now open, and you're seeing a lot of major mining companies, we'll call it poly-commodity companies, starting to take an interest in Bolivia, which is good.
Well, that's good. All right, so just, I don't know, in closing here, I guess summing up, what should investors be keeping their eyes on? I guess more drill results and that resource that is pending.
Yeah, it is. It's still in exploration mode. Lots of drilling happening right now. And yes, watch for results, but also watch for, the results from different areas in the Calder too. Like you got a whole bunch of different targets that have been tested. Yeah. I would say over the next few months, people should have a clear picture. This thing is huge. I call it a generational discovery.
One that could provide a lot of jobs and a lot of wealth and a lot of necessary metals, and some of those indium and some of those things that are not that common are needed for modern day technologies as well. So it's a very great story. It's really, I'm really pleased to have El Oro as a sponsor to my radio show, and I'm very pleased to have you once again with us. Quentin, just a company well-funded to carry out this drill program.
Anyway. It did a pretty big raise back in, I think, March of this year, and it was more than sufficient to cover the first leg of, resource drilling and so forth. Like, it'll get the company well down the line for resource, network, and other aspects of early stage, PEA level preparation.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Quentin, for being with us once again. And folks, don't go away, because I'm going to be right back with Alistair McLeod, who will be talking to us about the gold markets and what he sees in terms of the dollar debt problem. So we'll be right back with Alistair McLeod. Don't go away.
Lion One Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barakoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
Labrador Gold is an exploration company focused on its flagship Kingsway project, located in central Newfoundland Gold District. Labrador Gold's first phase drilling program has successfully identified high-grade gold mineralization, including a 3.6-meter intercept, grading 20.6 grams per ton gold, and 1.85 meters, grading 50.38 gram per ton gold. The company has approximately $35 million in the treasury and is led by a world-class team of CEO Roger Moss and technical advisors Sean Ryan and Quentin Henney.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.